Paul Steinhauser reports nationally for Fox News and locally checking in with us this morning. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Jack. And out in Oakland, California, at about 2 o'clock Eastern, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Democrat turned independent who's running for president, will be making a major announcement. He'll be announcing his running mate. And so a lot of eyes on RFK Jr. We've seen the polls. He's polling higher than any third party or independent candidate. You got to go back to Ross Perot in 1992 to find somebody who's been polling that high. He's in the mid-teens in a lot of surveys nationally and in the key battleground states. So RFK, Jack, announcing his running mate today. And that'll also help him as he tries to get on the ballot across the country. A bunch of states mandate that you have to have a running mate to get on the ballot, so that'll help him as he tries to do that. He says he has enough signatures here in New Hampshire, by the way, to get on the ballot here, Jack.
Well, Paul, let's stick with this for a moment, and then I want to ask a question. Why Oakland, California? I know he lives out in California. But having a running mate that also has a checkbook with a lot of liquidity can help. And is he looking at the former wife, one of the Google founders?
That's right. Nicole Shanahan, I believe is her name, 38 years old, very accomplished attorney, also somebody who bankroll, if you remember during the Super Bowl, there was that big RFK ad that got a lot of airtime, kind of showed him his family, RFK, JFK. She was the mastermind behind that, both paying for it and producing that ad. So the thought is that she may be the one he's going to pick. There were some other high-profile names we've talked about before, but we will find out at 2 o'clock Eastern.
And, Paul, real quickly, I think this is going to have an impact on the Biden-Trump race. I'm not saying how much. I'm not saying if it's significant, but it's not insignificant. And I'm not saying, although I can say what I think, who it helps or hurts.
Yeah, the key for him, you're absolutely right. It looks like it will impact the race. Just look at his polls, Jack. He's anywhere from 15, 16, 17% in some of these polls. Those are some big numbers we haven't seen from a third-party candidate. You got to go back over 30 years, right, Ross Perot. The key, though, for him is he's got to get on the ballot in these states. Right now, the only state he's actually on is Utah. He's got 7 months to go, and if he can do that and get on the ballot in some key battleground states, yeah, he could impact this race. And the argument is, does he hurt Biden or does he hurt Trump? There's an argument to be made for both.
Paul Steinhauser reporting live nationally for Fox News in Oakland, California. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Jack.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right, we are back. John Decker, our own White House correspondent, joining us live this morning. And while there's that major bridge collapse after the tanker hit it in Baltimore, we'll get back to that in other news this morning. News talk, the civil bond situation yesterday with Donald Trump being cut. It was interesting to watch the reaction on some media, including, let's just say, more liberal-oriented media. But anyway, John Decker talking about something completely different. He pays close attention to the Supreme Court. A battle over abortion pills moves to the Supreme Court today, John.
Well, that's exactly right. The Supreme Court, in less than an hour, will hear oral arguments concerning the availability of mifepristone. That's the abortion pill widely available in the United States. In fact, medical abortions of all abortion procedures all across the country. And what the Supreme Court, in taking up this case, is going to consider is whether to roll back the availability of mifepristone as women increasingly rely on medication to end. So that this is a case that has major implications, not only in terms of the issue of abortion and the availability of this abortion pill, but also, Jack, you pay attention to political implications. We know that abortion energized Democratic voters, independent voters, after the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade with the Dobbs decision 2 years ago. It led to, I believe, the Democrats holding on to the U.S. Senate. There was no red representatives. And so a decision by the Supreme Court could potentially have an impact on the 2024 race in terms of energizing Democratic voters and independent voters once again.
Any way to read the court on this, John? You're a member of the bar there. Yep,
I am. I'm a member of the Supreme Court bar. I think that one of the issues before you get to the substance of this particular case is whether or not the petitioners in this case actually have standing. And so for me, I will pay a lot of attention to the types of questions being asked by the conservative members of the Supreme Court focusing on that particular issue. If you don't have standing, there is no case. There is no way that the petitioners in this case, a newly formed group, could maintain this particular case. And that's the reason why that is one of the hurdles that they first need to get past.
Well, it might be the way out, because I'll tell you, I think the court, when you look at when the Roe v. Wade memo was amazingly leaked and it was going to be thrown back to the states, the impact that had on, I think it was midterms, I just don't think it's great for the Supreme Court to become a political instrument. I'm not saying they are. I know you're very supportive. You're a member of the bar, but, you know, we're not that far away from a presidential election. There's already been enough talk and enough change on some of these things coming out of the court. It would be interesting, or I think kind of in a, it'd be interesting if they do something that could have an impact on this election.
Well, that's right. You know, they're well aware of the impact that they had on the 2022 midterms, but they should not be considering political implications of their decisions. They should only rule based upon the law, the Constitution.
Right.
That is the sole fact. Those are the sole factors that should guide any Supreme Court decision.
John Decker, our own White House correspondent. Make it a great Tuesday. Thank you, John.
You too, Jack. Thanks.
Chief Mark Armiganian is the head of liquor enforcement for the New Hampshire Liquor Commission and works with our establishments around our region. Been a little bit. We're cruising into spring here. I know you're at the State House. Busy morning, but wanted a public safety update. Good morning, Chief.
Busy. Good morning, Jack. Busy, busy morning. We're coming off a great St. Patrick's Day event. It really expounds on the fact that the 603 is just doing things very responsibly. And one of the biggest things for us they're doing is our licensees are serving and our patrons are drinking responsibly. And that always puts a relief and a great smile on our face that our messaging is getting out. As we're going into the next couple weeks here, as we've heard through yourself and other media outlets, we're going to be experiencing the solar eclipse and the events that occur around that from April 5th to around the 8th. And we are estimating, I think the last I saw the estimates of the amount of people that will be visiting our state and finding their way to the North Country to attend those events are somewhere around 10 to 50,000 people. So, again, another thing that puts a smile on our face is that people are, like we do every day of the week, we enjoy this state. That's why we reside here. That's why we bring up families here. It puts a smile on our face to know that people are actually going to come to our state to enjoy the same thing that we have enjoyed all these years. So it is an event that doesn't happen too often. So with that in mind, we are doing the same thing we do for every major event in this state, and that is getting out there to our licensees with our education platform and messaging. We feel that has been our success in the last 7 years. This ride has been 7 years thus far, Jack, 7 years next week. So
wow.
We have changed a lot here, and not only seeing what has happened through data and the positive results from our data, but mm-hmm. also the input that we're getting from our licensees and, quite honestly, those that live in our communities. We're regulating this industry to the level of not only industry safety, but community safety. And as I always say, we're keeping a very close eye and close to our hearts that vulnerable age group that I still have children in. So so it actually, as we move past events, we're going to be moving into that time of the year with our vulnerable age group of prom and graduation time. And then, right around the corner.
And then before you know it, you know, spring and summer, the bikes will be out. Hey, Mark, you know, it's interesting. Mark Armaghini in New Hampshire Liquor Enforcement. I would not have thought the solar eclipse event would be such a draw. But, you know, you have to plan and think of everything. Would you say upwards of 50,000 additional guests?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the numbers that are being shared with us right now. I know that they're a guesstimate, and that's fine. It allows us to do operational planning. Yeah. And allocate personnel to the North Country to help out traditional law enforcement and just making sure that this event stays as safe as everybody wants it to be. And yeah, it's funny that I see that those numbers, and I think about my time at Troop D and running traffic in the Capital Region for the races every year, that amount of people, that influx of people coming into the state or moving to the North Country needs attention. It just needs attention. And we have no doubt that this is going to be a very positive event.
Good. Hey, I know you're at the state house. Before I let you go, if any licensee or someone wants to open a business or touch base with you or meet with you or one of your team, what's the best way folks should reach out, connect with you, talk with you, phone number, website? What's the best way you prefer or recommend?
Phone number, 603, of course, 271-3521 will get you into our help desk. You want to talk to me, tell them you want to talk to me. I'll talk to you every day of the week and even on the weekends. Our website, of course, is New Hampshire Liquor Enforcement .gov. You can also go to our website through the New Hampshire .gov website, which will actually show you a plethora of education platforms that anybody, not only our licensees, anybody can take a look at. And if you have suggestions as you browse through, give me a holler. I'd love to get input and hear the creativeness of people that are outside the box and give us ideas on what we might change or what we might want to talk about a little bit more because they see trends happening. So, it's one of those things that the partnership of the success of the Liquor Commission is the people that are the customers and licensees of it. They're our best partners, and we look for input every day of the week. And it could be negative input. Constructive criticism is great. I have very broad shoulders, so if I'm doing it wrong, I want to know I'm doing it wrong.
All right. I appreciate it as well. Thank you very much, Mark Armaghini of New Hampshire Liquor Enforcement. Thanks for that, and make it a great Tuesday. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Jack.
Alicia Preston, Xanthopoulos, Seacoast Online. Little history there. You like history. Good morning, APX.
Good morning, Jack. I, too, am a history buff. That was fascinating to listen to.
Don't you love some of those documentaries on Churchill?
I do. I love anything. You know, anything to do with World War II that's been coming out the last few years has really been eye-opening, and it reaffirms some of the information we knew from before, but it is a fascinating period in world history.
And, you know, the other thing, Alicia, is the fact that a lot of people don't know is Churchill, after World War II, and it was clear that we were going to win, defeat Hitler, and, of course, what was going on in the Pacific, and he was not reelected prime minister of parliament.
Well, history tends to remember things in a better picture than maybe the moment of the time, and I think that's always true.
Well, anyway, what's going on in your life locally? I know you're probably on the way to the State House. What's cooking?
I am on the way to the State House. We're going the Finance Committee is taking up the latest amendment on a cannabis legalization bill, which, as I've said on your show before, I think New Hampshire is long overdue. I work in that space. It's not just a personal message, but so that's going to be interesting. You know, a lot going on in the news today. You know what got my goat this morning is watching the news coverage of the Supreme Court case on the abortion pill. Have you followed that?
Yeah, we had John Decker, our own White House correspondent, lead off with that this morning. He's covering that because it could have ramifications and implications. Yes. John Decker, our own White House correspondent, talking about that vote today. I was not aware prior of this coming up at the Supreme Court. I hope it's not one of these rulings that actually almost looks like an indirect political ruling, but we'll see where it goes. That hurdle of the group petitioning. I'm wondering if that you might see the Supreme Court put this off. But Alicia, yes, John Decker was on earlier about this abortion pill. Talk about it.
Well, the thing with me, and I don't have a strong opinion on it one way or another, but the narrative coming out of some of the national media of what this case is about is just knowingly wrong. You know, you think with what people are saying, they're going to ban this abortion pill. That has nothing to do with it. This is regulations that came in 2016 and 2021 out of the FDA that did things like said, you don't have to visit a doctor. It can just be mailed to you, and it can be prescribed to you by someone other than a doctor. That's what they're looking at, whether it should be limited or not, from these FDA rulings. But my goodness, you'd think that they were, this Supreme Court is going to decide to ban abortion and ban this pill, and it's just not true. And I wish those reporting on it would be more honest so they stop getting people riled up over something much smaller than it is.
Not going to happen, because the word ban, between now and November, you're going to hear the word ban more than you hear the word the or the.
It's true. Can we ban the word ban?
Everything's going to be banned. Everything's going to be banned. We're going to ban sand on Hampton Beach. Banned. Everything's going to be banned. Hey, real quickly on the marijuana legalization thing. One of our, J-Doc, I think it was Anna Brown yesterday. Did she say she actually thinks, depending on how this comes out of finance, it could have the votes to pass the Senate? If it does, what does the governor do, Alicia?
Well, the amendment being brought forward today by Representative McGuire was worked on from the commission where Senator Abbott was leading the charge. And it really depicts what the governor has indicated he'd be willing to sign. So this bill is taking all the components, my understanding anyway, that Governor Sununu said he needed in a bill in order to pass it, and puts it down on paper so that this is something that not only can get through the state Senate, but that can actually be signed by the governor. So I'm very optimistic that if this amendment goes through, this is what it looks like. It's a franchise model in New Hampshire and has lots of protections and heightened regulation for safety and taxation. So I'm optimistic that if this amendment comes through, it's something that can go through both the Senate and be signed by the governor.
And keep in mind, though, the governor doesn't have to sign a bill. He can allow it to become law, correct?
Right. He can just not sign it. I mean, he has three options. He can veto it, he can sign it, or he can let it become law without his signature. So I hope only two of those are on the table for this one.
All right. When, what does this come? When is it, like next month, April, come to a head?
Yeah, crossover, which is when House bills go to the Senate, I believe is the first or second week in April. So we'll start seeing some Senate action about then.
All right. APX will let you drive safely. Alicia Presidentopoulos, Seacoast Online, talking legalized marijuana. Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio National correspondent. How a busy, cluttered mind, maybe a nap is not such a bad thing for you.
No, take a nap and calm down with your to-do list. You just don't need as much. So we now know, according to Yale University psychologists, that feeling too busy or like you don't have enough time to do what you want is called time famine. And it can actually lead to poor work performance, to burnout. And it's as bad for your mental health as being unemployed. If this goes on for too long, it can have structural changes to your brain. That's what it creates. So there's a couple things that you can do to stop this. And there's three main ones. I'm going to tell you real quick. Number one, don't time block. Experts in productivity love this one, but it's annoying. It's basically where you put your to-do list in your calendar. They say, stop doing that. Not every task deserves to be in your planner. You know, give the dog water. The dog will let you know if it's thirsty. It doesn't belong next to a meeting with your boss. They also say when you finish something early, stop doing things. Just celebrate by doing nothing for a couple minutes. And then finally, spend money when needed to get time back. Time is finite. It is valuable. And none of us know how much time we have. So if you work late, it is okay to order takeout. Don't beat yourself up over it. It's okay. A lot of it comes down to not like getting rid of some of the guilt that comes from the society in which we live, where you need to be super productive at all times.
Or if someone sends you a message, don't feel like you have to get back to them in 20 seconds. You know, a lot of what you're talking about is stress. And, you know, it's interesting. We've had Jason Kuhn, who was a Navy SEAL, and he works with professional athletes. And he was explaining to me how the brain works when it gets too cluttered. It actually can cause like muscle reactions you don't even know are happening, and that's why you'll see sometimes a pro athlete, as good as they are, could be a 2-foot putt, and they miss it, or a baseball pitcher can't find the strike zone in a playoff game. A lot of times it's the yips, it's the brain. They're not they're so stressed and focused on other stuff. They're not thinking in the moment. But anyway, good stuff, Aaron.
Thanks. Have a good one, Jack.
The chief of the editor of New Hampshire Magazine, New Hampshire Business Review, the one, the only, Mike Cody. Good morning, sir. Great to have you back on. Good morning, New Hampshire, the pulse of an H.
Hey, thanks, Jack. It's great to be back. Yeah, although Elvis, yeah, I like the 68 comeback Elvis because he was lean and mean wearing a leather jacket. Wasn't quite so puffy yet.
Well, we've been working hard since you were last on. We've actually grown the show, our streaming numbers nationally, and, of course, our affiliates are now up in Portland, Maine, and having fun, so I'm glad you're back. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the biotech boom. You had an article in New Hampshire Magazine. Tell us about that.
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, this is a little different from New Hampshire Magazine. It's the cover story of our March-April issue is about the Advanced Regenerative Manufacturing Institute and the Milliard. And, you know, we also had a story about it in Business Review. But, you know, New Hampshire Magazine, as people know, is, you know, it's a feature magazine, and we write about all kinds of cool stuff, things to do and outdoor adventures and whatnot. But we want to feature this project because it's a big moment in time for New Hampshire. A lot is at stake here. And, you know, Dean Kamen is leading this effort to try to make the Queen City the go-to spot in the world for manufacturing human body parts. They're already doing work here that some of the work they're doing is already out in the marketplace. They're doing a lot of R&D work, working with companies all over the country. And it's right in the Milliard. I tell this story to so many times that people are probably tired of me talking about it around my family, but I'm the third generation of my family to work in the Wambach Mill Building in the Milliard. A lot of folks in Manchester have similar backgrounds. You know, their parents worked and grandparents worked in textile mills, you know, making fabric for Levi jeans and Pandora sweaters. And now those buildings are being used for research to make human body parts. Next door to the Wambach Mill, United Therapeutics is working on using 3D printers to make scaffolds to build lung tissue, human lungs, for transplant. And the whole idea of what they're doing at Army is to make parts that your body won't reject. Like right now, if you get a transplant, you're getting it from another person, or you're getting a pig heart, you're getting something that your body's going to need a lot of immunosuppressant drugs so that you don't reject it, so that you stay alive. If you manufacture something with your own cells, then you're not going to have that problem, and that's what they're working toward here.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because this is the kind of stuff, I mean, you know, sort of like not synthetic eyes, but eyes that can be transplanted that can actually work. And technology is incredible. I know this has been incubating for years now in the Milliard, but it is fascinating stuff. Maybe, Mike, while we have you back on, you could take a moment. Just tell us a little bit about New Hampshire Business Review that I know about and, of course, online and New Hampshire Magazine and the mission, what you're now doing.
Thanks. Well, I'll start with New Hampshire Business Review and what we've just been working on just the past couple of months. We just wrapped it up yesterday, is our New Hampshire 200 book, and that comes out every 2 years, and it's a list of the most influential business leaders and nonprofit leaders in the state. The first two editions included some overlap, so, you know, the idea was these are the top 200 and you hear some new players. This time around, we decided let's start from scratch. Let's not have anybody in this issue that was in it before, and we also asked alumni to send us nominations. Who are we missing? And I know we're still missing people, but it's a fascinating list. We have like 600 people coming to an event in April to celebrate. But they're basically folks in, you know, in manufacturing and in media and retail and law, everything you can imagine, banking. And a lot of these folks are people that, I went to end the list before, you know, because we've been doing it for a while. There's more. They think about 200 people in a state of 1.4 million. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of influential folks, but I think we have a great group here, and their stories are fascinating.
Now, in terms of your parent company, where are you headquartered? Your local, regional? Because I know that I know some of the history.
Yeah. So, I'm the editor. I'm the editor for the New Hampshire group of Yankee Publishing. Our parent company is Yankee. Yankee Publishing is based in Dublin.
That's
so
what I thought.
Yankee Magazine. And the Old Farmer's Almanac, those are the flagship publications.
Was it the Judd?
Yankee also owns the name, a company called, what's that?
The name Judd, it was a Hale? One of the original,
And the current CEO, Jamie Trowbridge, is the grandfather, is the grandson of the of the original founder of Yankee. We're also an employee-owned company, so we all have shares in the company. That happened a couple of years ago, and that's because the family really wanted to keep the company local. And
that's great.
You know,
I love it.
Sold it to a big media company. Who knows what would happen? So we're very, very locally rooted. The company cares about the community. In New Hampshire, we have New Hampshire Magazine, which comes out 10 times a year, New Hampshire Business Review, which comes out 24 times a year, 603 Diversity, which is a quarterly, and we also have various custom publishing magazines that we do. For example, one of our projects is the Boston Marathon. We put that magazine out every year. So we have a lot of things going on. It's a fun place to be, particularly in media. As you know, media, finding growth in media is a tough thing to do.
And if you have something that's working and you have fun with it and it's growing, and, of course, you need, and it's a partnership, I always say, between listeners, in your case, readers and maybe viewers, but also advertisers and sponsors and businesses. And if it comes together, it comes together. And it's great, and you can have some fun. A lot of people nationally are not having much fun. All right, Mike Cody, great stuff. We'll get you back again soon. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jack. Take care.
Julian Assange, will he be extradited? Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Take it away, Rory.
Yeah, Jack, good morning. So this morning, a court in the UK agreed to allow Assange to appeal the extradition order. So this is going to give him more time to stay in London as he tries to fight extradition to the U.S. He is facing 18 total counts here in the U.S., including 17 charges under the Espionage Act, one count under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. That's like 170 years in prison or something, all told up. But his appearance back in the U.S. is going to take a while longer, as it looks like he'll get another court battle.
What a story. What a story. And, of course, a lot of military secrets leaked. We'll see where it's been. How many years now, roughly, Rory?
I think they released all the stuff back in 2007. So we're in the 17-year range.
Wow. Does it seem that wild? Does it seem that long? I guess so. Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
Dr. Vikram Mantramani, of course, host of his weekly podcast, Navigating Uncertainty. It's a wonderful podcast if you haven't accessed it, wherever, however you get your podcast. And, of course, The Pulse of an H, and author of his latest book, The Generalist, because he's a pretty generalized person. Dr. Vic, good Tuesday morning.
Good morning, Jack. How you doing today?
Well, probably better than the folks in Baltimore in this search and rescue going on, huh?
I know. Horrifying, right? Really awful to watch that video. I watched the video of the thing collapsing. Really, really not good.
Yeah. Well, again, that thing hit it smack in the middle head on. And, you know, we have, the investigation is going to continue. I'm sure the captain and it's like an airplane situation. They're going to get to the bottom if there was mechanical issues, weather stuff, whatever. But that thing hit that right in the middle. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right. What's going on in your mind? What's about this Robert F. Kennedy Jr. story today, picking his running mate? People might say nothing to see here, not going anywhere. But his running mate has a lot of checks that are not going to bounce, if you know what I mean. And can basically make this a self-finance situation to get on a lot of ballots. And let me just ask you a quiz question without a lot of analysis, and I'm being totally sincere or serious. Look at New Hampshire, because I don't believe Joe Biden came here after not being here for 2 years after State of the Union and the First Lady a week or so ago just because they're looking for real estate up in Loon Mountain. I think they're trying to fortify. Okay, you're in a wise guy mood. I think they're trying to fortify a state that should already be blue in the bag for them. So if Kennedy's on the ballot, let's just say New Hampshire. You know Trump's going to get a strong number because look at the primary. Biden's not that strong here. I know the Democrats wrote him in, but Kennedy running as an independent is going to have an influence on even states like New Hampshire if he's on the ballot.
Of course. Yes, Jack. Look, I mean, the country is so polarized. We've got things so tight. Anyone running on the ballot is going to create, I think, the risk of some disruption. Does it amount to significant enough that it sways an outcome of an election? That I'm not sure about, Jack. I haven't done the math to actually go through state by state to say how many electoral votes could this go towards this third party or an independent candidate. Could this influence the outcome? But look, will it have an impact? Of course it will. Will it be significant enough to matter? I don't know.
Well, let me go back. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is a lot better known than the Green Party candidate was that may have helped George W. Bush edge Al Gore, and he's a lot better known than Ross Perot was.
Yep.
You know, Kennedy, everyone knows the name, right? I mean, it's ingrained for a half a century or longer into our minds.
Yep.
And he's got some intrigue to him, some mystique, if you will.
Yep.
I got to tell you, it's if this is a 2 or 3 point race between Biden and Trump, of course it's going to have impact.
Yeah. No, that's right. The question is, does it have enough impact in key states that will swing the outcome in a way that
Let me just tell you, you probably don't agree, man. Being a pesky, disobedient student in your class, yes. Yes, because it doesn't take much in states like Georgia and even New Hampshire with 4 electoral college votes. If he throws this thing off and he takes from one of those 2 major candidates, absolutely has impact.
Yep. Yep. No, look, again, it's definitely going to have impact, Jack. Is it significant enough to change the outcome of an election? I don't know the answer to that question. Right. I think at this point, the election is going to be a referendum on the economy, on the border, on a couple of things that we've talked about. And, you know, I'm not really sure that a third party changes the topics of focus and whether or not they provide a differentiated enough perspective to generate meaningful support. Now, again, in these really tight swing states, could it matter? Take a couple of points off? Yes, it can. Will it? Again, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to tell you because you're the one telling me. It is going to have impact. And the fact that the national media is silent on this, it tells me it's going to have more. And there's another one. Look at the DNC, Democrat National Committee, and how many, you know, basically complaints they're putting into the Federal Election Commission people spending tons of lawyer money to try and keep Kennedy off the ballot. Why do you think they're doing that?
Yeah, it's interesting, Jack. Obviously, they want to keep him off the ballot because they think Kennedy's going to draw from Democrats. But let me tell you, the Kennedy style, approach, topics, you know, he was at Porkfest up here in New Hampshire, the Libertarian Free State Project event. Like, he's got an appeal that is, you know, libertarians love him, right? So let's not say that Kennedy is a draw 100% only from a Democrat vote. There will likely be some liberty-oriented, freedom-focused individuals that will say, you know what? I historically voted Republican. I might give Kennedy a look.
Well, okay, but they're not Trump people. And a lot of these people you're talking about, you know the Trump voter in the primaries, and they're going to vote in the general. They're with him no matter what. Biden doesn't have a lock in his base. And you're right on the sort of contrarian, out-of-the-box. And, you know, I get a kick out of how the national media – and I'm just going to say at the left side of the Democrat Party, for a lot of years, they kind of intrigued by Elon Musk, electric cars, electric batteries, this brilliant guy, until he gets defined a little bit. Now they can't stand him because they think he's more right side of the aisle than left. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., yes, the son of RFK, the nephew of JFK, but once he started questioning the COVID vaccine and some of these other things, he's a little bit out there and not our cup of tea, so therefore he's crazy. And look how they try and disown him. I got to tell you, the country likes out-of-the-box thinking. The country's not thrilled with the choices, and the country's tired and looking for an alternative. And I just think this could be a significant entry or change here, and I see nothing coming from low labels.
Yeah, but again, they said they would, right? So the question is when and how. They're on a bunch of ballots. Who, what, where. Look, there's still time for them to come forth, Jack, with an alternative. Again, I haven't heard anything either, so nothing new there. But they could come forth, right? And could that have impact? Again, depends who it is. Depends what the issue they lead on is. I don't know.
Well, with your busy and curious mind, you always have something else you want to talk about. So we've talked about what I want to talk about. What do you want to talk about?
Well, did you see what happened with Trump's stock, Truth Social, today?
No.
Truth Social went public, up 40%, making the president's stake worth about $5.5 billion.
There's his money problems taken care of, huh?
Right. That was earlier today. I haven't followed the stock per se, but roughly you know, if it's public, he's going to have the ability to borrow against it. You know, it's probably locked up. There's a whole bunch of other things. Obviously, the other thing that caught my attention was the bridge. Thought that was interesting. And then Visa and MasterCard were agreeing to lower the fees for swiping their card. Now, that
sounds small, Jack, but that's a big thing for small businesses. If they can stop paying as much to the credit card processors, that could actually help small businesses a little bit more than people think. So, you know, those are the things that caught my attention today. But again, there's a lot we can talk about.
Yeah, it's early. It's early in the week. What about navigating uncertainty? What do you got this week?
So navigating uncertainty, it's funny. I was just talking with J-Dog earlier about it. I'm not sure where we're going to go with this, but this week may in fact be one of the transition weeks. We have Katrina Lantos Sweat is going to be played this weekend. So she's talked about human rights, what's happening in the world, specifically religion and respect for freedom of religion, what's happening with anti-Semitism in the United States. Her father, Tom Lantos, last congressman to have been a survivor of the Holocaust. She has a fabulous and amazingly uplifting personal story. And then we have In the Hopper, which will play, I think, next weekend, a friend of mine, Barry Hinckley, who ran for the U.S. Senate in Rhode Island, who is a fascinating individual who has a new project out there called the Redeclaration of Independence, where he wants candidates at all federal offices to talk about issues that he thinks all Americans care about, like the budget deficits. Can we live within our means? Can we secure a border, et cetera? 10 points. He's going to talk a little bit about that. But I think we're going to air that one next week.
Awesome. All right. Now, how much snow did you get in at Lincoln in Loon?
3 feet, Jack. We had
no,
3 feet
no, you
at our
didn't.
Door.
No, you didn't.
We had rest.
That's
we
a drift. That's a drift. That's a drift.
There are drifts. Sure, there were drifts in there.
New Hampshire got 28. If you do the yardstick and your deck, you can't go like with the roof overhang. You count 4 feet up where you're going to walk out.
Right in front of the garage. Before the bank. No, we lost a couple inches here. I don't know. It's probably 2 feet or so out there. But I shoveled about 2+ feet right in front of the garages there. It helped the mountain a ton. The conditions were amazing. Everything was great. So we had a great weekend. It was a little powdery. Some people like that. I find it tough on the knees, but otherwise it was all good.
Oh, you like the corduroy.
Good for the mountain.
You like the corduroy, the groom stuff. All right, Dr. Vic.
Corduroy.
Thank you.
All right, Jack. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Navigating uncertainty. But Matthew Bartlett was on with us the other day on some political analysis, one of our regular contributors and partners out there. Good morning, Matthew.
Hey, good morning. Yes, you're following what everybody's been talking about, which is the Donald Trump SPAC finally going public here. And it's been, you know, rumors and rumblings for a long time as to what this means for the president. And it looks as if it's going live. It's popping like a bubble here. But what does that mean in the future, both in price and when he could, you know, potentially unlock some of this cash?
Well, let's talk about what is it, Matt, from a media point of view. I know they did a merger Friday to get the NASDAQ stock position for DJT, but what DJT? Social media platform, as I said on the show in the last segment, there was a time when Trump was coming out of the last election, was looking at buying a media group, buying a media outlet, and he sort of started his own platform. What is it, Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, if you remember, Trump got angry with Twitter, angry with social media, and started his own Truth Social. And this is the parent company for Truth Social, and that has gotten a tremendous amount of investment and is now going public. They created a SPAC, which is kind of like an entity with a cover on it, and then you uncover it and you go, oh, this is what it is, and there's a lot of interest in it. Now, as you mentioned in that USA Today article, Truth Social is generating like $3 million. So,
yeah, but
how is a company worth, you know?
Well, hold on. But for our folks that aren't on it, what is Truth Social? Just in layman's terms, just a social media platform?
It is essentially, a conservative version of Twitter. It is what Donald Trump prefers. If you remember, there was Parler, there was Getter, there was a whole host of different companies that tried to rival mainstream social media.
Right.
Now, every liberal will say, you know, Twitter's conservative, and conservatives say, they're shadow banned. So Trump started this. He's on Truth Social. This is the SPAC, the parent company. A lot of interest right now. Let's remember, you know, on Wall Street, it's a voting machine. It's also a weighing machine.
So right now there's a lot of interest. This could be GameStop. A lot of people, unsophisticated investors, are coming off the sidelines. They hear Donald Trump. They're pouring their money in, and this could be the beginning of the greatest rocket ship to the moon, like GameStop was back in the day. And a lot of people can get in early. This could be Facebook's IPO, or this could be the opposite. This could be fool's gold. This could be a lot of interest with absolutely no fiscal business or there, and this could implode. But right now, the former president is sitting on a massive win. As Dr. Vic just said, that money will be locked up, right, for a long time, you know, probably half a year, so he can't access it. But we're talking about $5 billion catapulting him, at least legitimately, onto the Forbes 500 list.
But let's go back a minute, Matt. I don't want to hold you. I know I pulled you out of a just real quick. A couple things there. If you look at Uber or some of these marketing startups, they didn't make a lot of money for a while. In fact, they were losing money. You look at Spotify, same thing. So this Truth Social, you're right. It's not flush with cash, not making a lot of money. But it's Trump. And the thing that you have to wonder, he's pretty good on media marketing stuff. The election is about, you know, around the corner this fall. Hypothetically, if he gets reelected, this is probably going to be his social media platform. He'll own the out. This will be his way of communicating. And you wonder, I'm just saying, it's Trump. How do you bet against him on media stuff?
I mean, let's just be clear. It has been his preferred method of communication since he was banned from Twitter. After the 2020 January 6th.
So, like, pretty election. Much the last 3+ years.
Yep. Right. Now, Elon Musk bought Twitter and said, hey, you're welcome back. He still continues to, you know, use, you know, it's funny. He will post on Truth Social. Hardly anyone outside of reporters, you know, and a few people I know are on Truth Social. But someone will take his Truth Social post and then put it on Twitter, and then everybody sees it. So, yeah, you can bet on Donald Trump all you want, but forget Donald Trump. This is a social media platform, and it is very challenging to get people to use this. You know, it's very challenging to make these go. For every one Facebook, there are, you know, a million MySpaces. And, you know, they go back and forth. Snapchat is hot. Now it's TikTok. Now there's that one we don't even know. So playing the social media game, good luck. But right now, again, Donald Trump is sitting on a massive financial windfall. It is unclear how long that lasts or if he will be able, you know, when he will be able to access it.
Okay, before I let you go, because I didn't call you in on this, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., speaking of big pockets, big check writing, a lot of money, one of the Google founders, ex-wife, one of the founders, probably his choice today in Oakland, California, probably has a lot of money to get a lot of signatures to get on more ballots. Why do I think this is not inconsequential?
You know, for a third-party candidacy, typically you want somebody who is a known entity. I have no idea why he is picking this person. I've never heard of her. She has money. Well, guess what? You know, she could spend that money, even if she's not VP, if she believes in the cause. As noted by, I believe, Paul Steinhauser, he's only on the ballot in Utah right now. So if he can get on the ballot, the question is where, and the question is who does he pull from? If you just say the name Kennedy, you know, as you've said, low-informed voters may say, sure, I'll take the third option, chicken or beef, I'll choose fish. But those that know him, those that hear him, tend to be, you know, the Steve Bannon, the Tucker Carlson. They want to talk about COVID. They want to talk about issues that play much more to the right than they do to your traditional Democrat. I don't know any Democrat that is excited about him.
No,
I do know
not,
former DeSantis voters.
See, the only thing I'd say, and all due respect, Matthew Bartlett, because, you know, I have a lot of respect for you, Darby Phil Advisors, two things real quick, and I'll let you go. I'm not talking about Democrats, Republicans. I'm talking about independent voters who don't like Biden or Trump. And the other thing is, he's not going to win the thing. But Ross Perot wasn't going to win that election either, and he impacted it.
Yeah, 100%. We don't know how this cookie crumbles. Again, you could hear the name Democrat, Kennedy, and you go, I hate Biden, I hate Trump, I'll take a Kennedy, that sounds good to me. Or we could have plenty of ads hearing about how this guy was, you know, born into the lap of luxury, has been a heroin addict, has been a serial female woman abuser, you know, we've got suicides in his past, you know, talking about his, you know, likening COVID to the Holocaust. Vaccines. He has a treasure trove that people will be doing oppo dump after oppo dump after oppo dump if and when this becomes
legitimate.
And I'm
Matt,
very skeptical who he actually appeals to.
We live in a day and age where crazy exists. Thank you, Matthew.
Crazy wins. Thanks, Jack.